Hey, it's you, man, from KC95 here. Good evening and welcome to Toasted Tavern. Your host, Scott Tobin, and the man called Wags are ready to bring you the night in sports. So pull up a stool, grab a drink, and let's get toasted.
And good evening. Yes, a little bit earlier in the evening tonight for our regular Toasted Tavern listeners. We are on tonight at 6 o'clock. Some obligations have come up in our lives that we had to shift some things around. And honestly, it's the first time we've been with you in about 2 weeks now because of those same kind of obligations. But we knew we had to get out and talk to you guys tonight because big, big stuff going on in the world of St. Louis sports. We'll get to that in just a little bit. But Scott's good to see you, man. Scott Tobin joining me tonight. And it's good to see you. It's been a little bit, but good to see you're happy, healthy, and still rocking the Cardinal gear.
Yeah, man, you got to be rocking the Cardinal gear. There's good things going on in baseball, but we'll get back to that in a second. But yeah, man, I'm doing good. The weather's nice. I feel good. It's starting to feel like summer in St. Louis. How about yourself? How's everything going on in your neck of the woods?
Going great. You know, I had a great Memorial Day. Hope you guys did as well. I got to hang out with some of my family. My parents and sister were down in Florida for a volleyball tournament. So it was just me, my brother, my sister, and some of their kids hanging out, which was really, really a lot of fun, actually. And then we got a chance to go see the new Top Gun movie, which if you haven't seen it yet, it's a must-see. It's a really, really good movie. I definitely enjoyed it. Not sure what I was expecting out of it, but it was really, really good. Probably, and I'm saying this with the full caveat that I'm a big Marvel fan, so far, it's the best movie I've seen this year.
I keep hearing that. I'm going to go see it on Sunday, so I'm looking forward to it. Still a huge fan of the original, so I'm anxious to see it.
Well, I'll spoiler warning a little bit. It's not really like going to ruin the movie, but this one starts pretty much the same way as the original one does, so nice. You'll get a really good kick in nostalgia right off the bat. It was awesome.
That's awesome. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I'm going to go see it in IMAX, too. Biggest screen I can.
That is awesome. Yeah, we saw it at the Chesterfield big screen, and it was good. I mean, you have to see it. It's one of those movies you have to see it in the movie theater. There's a lot of them that you can go, okay, I can watch it at home with a good sound system. But that one right there was one you have to see in the theater, and to see it in the biggest screen you can is definitely worth it.
Yeah, I'm excited, man. I can't wait.
Well, hopefully after let's see. Are you going to see it in the morning or are you going to see it in the evening on Sunday?
It'll be late afternoon.
Okay, all right. So hopefully that means you'll be celebrating 4 victories by the St. Louis Cardinals at that point, preparing for a 5th because, yes, did I say 5? 5 games in the course of 4 days? That I did. The Cardinals are in Chicago for 5 games here over the next 4 days. And nothing scares me more than the Cardinals going in to play games at Wrigley Field. And a majority of them being on national television doesn't make it any better. But it is what it is. We get a doubleheader on Saturday. We've got some really, really good pitching matchups lined up outside of this doubleheaders because both teams have not yet determined what those starters are going to be. And that's going to be based on bullpen usage and things over the next couple of days, plus who they can call up, who they want to call up, all of that. There's a lot of fine metrics that are going around that will eventually decide the doubleheader starters at that point. But before then, we've got a couple of really good pitching matchups and some really good games. But first up, before we get into that, Scott, what is your gut take on a 5-game series in 4 days at Wrigley, between the Cardinals and the Cubs? Because it scares the hell out of me.
It's another good test for this team, man. They should be feeling really good about themselves. You know, everybody said that homestand that we just went through was going to be a big test for this team. You know, you had the Blue Jays, the Brewers, and the Padres, 3 really good teams. And the Cardinals came out of there 6-3. You split the 2 games with the Blue Jays, you split the 4 games with the Brewers, and then you sweep a San Diego team that, yeah, they don't have Tatis Jr., but still a really good lineup with Manny Machado and Eric Hosmer and all those guys. And the Cardinals held them to what, 7 runs in the 3-game series, I believe? Something along those lines. I think it was 7-2-3.
Yep, 7 runs, yep.
Yeah, so, I mean, great job by the pitching staff. I was a little nervous considering Packy Naughton started one of those games against the Padres. But he did really well, and then Adam Wainwright was vintage. Adam Wainwright is on Tuesday night. You know, it's a shame that he didn't get the win. You know, he goes 7 innings, get 10 strikeouts. He had a 2-hitter. Unfortunately, Giovanni Gallegos couldn't hold the lead, but the great Albert Pujols showed himself once again. And I'm going to tell you what, man, being at that ballpark, there was no doubt to anybody left of the 35,000 people that were still there when Albert walked to the plate in the 10th inning that game was over. I mean, it was electric in that place. And he moved up another chart. We'll talk about the record that he moved up the standings of that in just a second. But, yeah, that was really cool to see Albert do that. And then I think the biggest take of that was Dakota Hudson yesterday.
Yes.
You know, he goes out, has a rocky first inning. Harrison Bader made a diving catch that saved a couple of runs and ended that inning after, you know, he gave up a run and four hits. Then Dakota decides, okay, I got out of that with just giving up one run. I'm going to retire the next 18 batters in a row. And Nolan Arenado broke out of his slump against the Padres the last couple of days. You know, he had a rough May, but started off June the right way with three hits and a homer and three RBIs yesterday. And the Cardinals were able to win it, although it was a little iffy in the ninth inning. You know, Cody Whitley had a little issue there that made it really scary. And then Nick Wickram had a little issue with Robinson Cano. Cano hit a fly ball that I was pretty scared that it came off the bat was going to be a game-tying grand slam in the top of the ninth inning. But luckily, Corey Dickerson caught it at the wall. So Cardinals win that series. They sweep that, and they go to Chicago. And this is kind of an easing of the schedule for the Cards. Wags, they've played 26 games against teams with winning records. So now you get a little break. You've got the Cubs, you've got the Reds, you've got the Pirates coming up. So you get a little break. You do have Tampa Bay thrown in the middle of that three-game series in Tampa next week. But a lot of winnable games coming up. And the schedule kind of flips now because May was really tough for the Cardinals and the Brewers had a cakewalk. The Brewers have only played 12 games against winning teams so far this year, and 8 of them were against us. So, I mean, they've played the Cubs and the Pirates and the Reds pretty much all year so far. Milwaukee's got a brutal June. I think they've had the easiest schedule in baseball so far. They have the toughest schedule in June. The Cardinals' schedule kind of flips. The Cardinals have had the third toughest schedule so far this year. June kind of relaxes. So, I'm going to say this right now. The national pundits are starting to jump on the Cardinal bandwagon. Everybody on Major League Baseball, MLB Tonight last night, picked the Cardinals to overtake the Brewers in June and be in first place by July 1st. So let's hope that that's not a curse from the national media. And we have a really good June after a really awful June last year. So it should kind of even out because June was – if anybody remembers June for the Cardinals last year, it was pretty ugly.
It was. And, you know, the fact that the Cardinals, like you said, had probably the third toughest schedule in baseball up until this point, and now they sit – just two games behind the Brewers, who, as you said, had one of the easiest schedules the last, you know, month and a half. That right there tells you they've kind of weathered the storm a little bit. The only concern for me is this team seems to play down to competition a lot. And that's a different team. It has a different feel to it this year. So I'm not going to sit there and say that that's the going to happen again. But it is a little bit of that worry in the back of your mind that, yeah, they definitely have risen to the occasion against these tough teams. Like you said, sweeping the Padres, splitting with the Brewers, splitting with the Blue Jays, all well and good. But will they win the games that they need to win at this point in time? They've got the veteran leadership. They've got Albert back. They've got Yadi. They've got Wainwright. You know, I'm going to throw Miles Michaelis into that mix as well. I think he has got a nice veteran presence. He has really kind of settled into himself this year and kind of bounced back. As we'll see him going tomorrow night against Marcus Stroman. So you have all of that. So I think they're going to be able to use that. Nolan Arenado, like you said, has broken out of it. You said he had a rough May. The RBI and the home run that he hit yesterday, his first RBI since May 22nd against the Pirates, his first home run since May 18th against the Mets. So if that doesn't tell you how much he has struggled the last couple weeks, that right there should tell you that. But having a guy like Paul Goldschmidt basically go on a tear, which he usually does at this point in time anyway, allows you to have a guy like Nolan Arenado slump a little bit. The fact that Nolan Gorman has come in and come in hot. The fact that Juan Yepes has done enough early on in that part of May to keep this team going. It gives you that different feel that, okay, this may not be like the last couple of years where you go up against these weaker teams, you play down to the competition, and you lose games that you shouldn't have. Now, they've done that already this year. They lost 2 of 3 to Baltimore, which they probably shouldn't have done. They have lost games that they should have won. But I think this is a team that can learn from that and has learned from that. And going into this month of June against the bottom feeders, in a sense, they're gonna succeed immensely. The only thing is you're going up against a Chicago team that – while he hasn't pitched deep, you're going up against a guy in Keegan Thompson who's 5-0 with a 1.58 ERA. You're going up against a guy in Marcus Stroman who's turned it around since a really poor starts of the season in May. He's only given up four runs in his last four starts. He seems to be getting stronger. You do have a opportunity against Steele on Sunday, but he's a lefty, and this team has still struggled against left-handed pitchers this year. And then you've got the doubleheader game on Saturday. Add into that, it's Wrigley Field. That's why I'm a little bit worried. But I feel like this team can go on a run and really, I'm not going to say put away the Brewers, but they have a chance to open up a pretty good cushion if they play and win the games they're supposed to.
Yeah, they could. I mean, this is a month, like you said, that we may look back, you know, in September and say, okay, that was the month that either made or broke the season. You know, you could really separate yourself, like you said, or you could fall back, which hopefully that doesn't happen. It's going to be interesting. I'm really excited tonight. I'm anxious to see what Matthew Liberatore looks like. You know, he was okay against Pittsburgh, did was really, really good in his second outing against the Brewers. So I'm anxious to see what we get out of Matthew Liberatore tonight. And, you know, this team is fun to watch. You know, I told somebody the other day, this is the most fun I've had watching the Cardinals in a long time because this offense can beat you in so many ways. They're doing the little things. They're stealing bases. They're advancing runners. They're hitting. I mean, how many years? Seems like the last 4 or 5 years, we're like, man, somebody gets on second or third and you can't get a sacrifice fly. That doesn't seem to be a concern this year. It seems like every time there's a runner on third base with less than two outs, they find a way to get that guy home this year. You know, so they're finding ways to score. They're hitting home runs. They're running. They're using their speed. They're having great base running. They're just beating teams in different ways. They can outslug you. They can beat you in close games. And so the fact that they have multiple ways to win, whereas, you know, the last couple of years, it was pretty much, okay, they've got to hit home runs or they're not going to score. You know, it's just fun. And, you know, when you're running and doing those little things, that gets the crowd excited. It's just fun. I mean, Harrison Bader leading the league in stolen bases. Tommy Edmonds right behind him. And, you know, those guys get on base and fans get excited. I mean, Albert even stole a base this weekend. You know, and those things get people excited and it makes it fun to watch the team. And, you know, we talked about the young guys and Gorman and Yepes. Guy that you've really got to give a lot of credit to is Brendan Donovan because he's come up here and hit, for one thing, had some big, big hits. But he's been clutch defensively. I mean, the kid's played, you know, he's played first, second, third, short, left, and right since he came up here. All he's got to do is catch, play center, and pitch, and he'll have done the whole thing this year. You know, so, and he's hitting almost 300. So, you know, you've got to give him a lot of credit. He's been really good. You know, they've gotten a lot of help in the bullpen. Andre Pallante has been really, really good for the most part. So, you know, they've had a lot of young guys step up. You know, Matthew Liberatore, like we talked about, has been good. And, you know, we'll see what happens on Saturday. You know, there's some talk that maybe we may get our first look at Zach Thompson at some point on Saturday, potentially. Or, and you and I talked about this right before we came on the show, there's a certain bearded left-hander that I know is kind of controversial in Cardinal land. But, you know, if you can get a ground ball veteran pitcher who's a big game pitcher who's pitched in a lot of postseason games the last few years and won some big games in Houston, if you could get Dallas Keuchel for a league minimum, why not? Why not bring him in here and see what you can get out of him? You know, if it doesn't work, you know, bring him in because you're not going to have Steven Matz for at least a couple of weeks yet. You're not going to have Jack Flaherty for at least a month. You've got to fill a spot in your rotation. Why not bring Keuchel in? I mean, it's not going to cost you a whole lot. Throw him out there for 3 or 4 games. If it works, great. You keep him and, you know, he's a huge part of your pitching staff, whether it's in the rotation or the bullpen the rest of the year. If it doesn't work, you're out, what, $300,000 and you kick it on down the road and you see what else you can do.
I'm also pretty sure he might still be in Chicago too. I mean, you never know. He may not have to go anywhere.
You're right. He very well could be.
Yeah. I mean, we ran a poll last week after he was released and it seemed like overwhelmingly the fans thought the Cardinals should go after him because of the fact that they have depth, but they don't have depth as far as pitching is concerned, because, you know, they've got a lot of young guys, but do you really want to throw these young guys into situations like this where maybe they can get hurt or maybe have their confidence shaken a little bit? I mean, Liberatore has come in, and like you said, he struggled a little against Pittsburgh, but he looked really, really good against Milwaukee. I think he's a guy that may not be ready for a full season, but he's definitely ready for the moment right now. Zach Thompson is another guy that I think could be ready for this moment right now, maybe not a full season as well. But outside of that, yes, you have depth, but I think you still do need a veteran presence in addition to what you have in Wainwright and Michaelis. And look what they got out of J.A. Happ and John Lester last year. Everybody kind of poo-pooed those moves at the deadline. And, yeah, they weren't sexy moves. And really, the first couple starts, you were going, man, told you. But those guys were key to getting that team on that run and into the playoffs. And why not for league minimum? You don't have to give anything up except for a little bit of money. It doesn't hurt to maybe take a look. And with the doubleheader looming on Saturday, yeah, maybe he's not ready for one of those two games, but maybe he is. But even if he's not, we talked before the show, we got another doubleheader coming up next week against Pittsburgh. So you're going to have a pitcher ready to go. So it may not be this weekend doubleheader, but having a guy like Keuchel here could be what they need for next week. Now, granted, you look at his ERA the last couple of years, it hasn't been great. He's about 2 years removed from the 1.99 ERA he had in 2020. So who knows if he's really, back, but he was playing in the American League too, playing in the American League Central, which it's not the AL East of years past, but still was a pretty high scoring division. So sometimes that translation of what an ERA looks like is not necessarily what you're going to get here. And coming into a team with a Mike Maddux, a guy that he's no Dave Duncan, but he's basically 1B to Dave Duncan in the last 20 years. Maybe it's something that, he can come in and maybe fix something mechanically or just, put the claw on there and fix him and comes in. Maybe he gives you 3 or 4 starts and maybe that's all he gets. But if that gets you to maybe a Jack Flaherty coming back or maybe a Steven Matz getting back into the rotation or giving Zach Thompson a chance and Liberatore to an extent, a chance to kind of continue to flourish while not depending on them to go 7-8 innings, maybe that's what it takes. And maybe that's all Keuchel's going to be here for. But you kind of have to look and see about maybe making that move.
I think so. You know what I was thinking about today? And the Cardinals, like you said, they have a history of going out and bringing in these veteran guys. Happened Lester, of course, last year. You can go back years ago and talk about guys like Woody Williams that they went out and got for nothing. The trade they made for Daryl Kyle when everybody said Daryl Kyle was washed up. But I think the example that I would go to, if anybody remembers in 2006, the Cardinals won the World Series. It was about this time of the year that there was a pitcher in New York that everybody said, oh, his ERA is horrible. He got released. He's no good anymore. He's washed up. Nobody wants him. Cardinals went out and signed him to a minor league contract. And you might remember a guy named Jeff Weaver. He was pretty big for the Cardinals. They don't win a World Series without him. Maybe Dallas Keuchel, you bring him in here. The White Sox team, that's still a young team. You bring him back to you bring him to the National League. You put him with the team, you give him Yachty to throw to. You have him around Wainwright. You have him around Michaelis. You have the defense. He's a ground ball pitcher. You've got Goldie and you've got Arenado. And that leadership and that clubhouse, it may make all the difference in the world. You never know. All of a sudden, do I think he's going to have a 1.99 ERA again? No. But, maybe Dallas Keuchel comes in here and just pitching in front of that defense and that clubhouse could be the change he needs. That he ends up being a key cog to this team down the stretch. You just never know when you get an opportunity like that. And I think you need to at least try to bring him in and see what you can get out of it.
Yeah, I mean, just running down what he kind of went through this year. He started off against Seattle, pitched 5 innings, gave up 3, got the win in that one. So, that was a pretty good start. And then that game against Cleveland, 10 runs allowed, 7 of them earned, and just an inning pitched. That really kind of ballooned his ERA at that point. But then he faced against the Royals. Didn't give up an earned run, gave up 2 runs, but in 4 innings. 4 runs against the Angels on May 1st, 2 against the Red Sox, shut out the Yankees for 5 innings back on May 14th. And then he gave up a couple of, 6-run games against the Yankees, against the Red Sox, and just 6 innings pitched. So, not a great last couple of games, but there were flashes this year of him being not a dominant pitcher, but a pitcher that can get you 5-6 innings. And that's kind of all the Cardinals need, I think, at this point for these doubleheader games that are coming up and really just to kind of get there. Because, as you said, the bullpen, for the most part, has been relatively solid. Palente has been great. He picked up the win on Memorial Day, picking up after Packy Naughton. Gallegos has blown 3 saves this year, but, he's done okay here and there. I mean, if you can get him out of high-leverage situations for a little bit, maybe you can get his mind right. That might be a good thing. Ryan Helsley has looked good, looks to be the closer right now. Maybe Jordan Hicks coming back in the next couple of weeks back into the bullpen might help things out a little bit there as well. Whitgren has been solid for the most part. Even Verhagen came in and pitched yesterday and pitched well. So if you can get a guy that can give you those 5 innings and then you can turn it over to a bullpen in a consistent manner, You know, if you know that this guy's getting the sixth, this guy's getting the seventh, this is the eighth, and this is the ninth, I think it definitely helps. And if you got a guy that like Keuchel that can get you to that point, why not take a flyer on him? And if you're not going to bring up the young guys, which is okay, you got to go out and maybe make one of those kind of moves right now.
Yep. I think that's the smart move, but see what Mo decides to do here in the next few days. As Keuchel did clear waivers yesterday, so he is available for anybody who wants to make the deal.
I mean, if you look at it, I mean, who could be in the market for him? I mean, the Yankees and the Mets are teams that have been thrown out there. I mean, any team will take a flyer for a league minimum on a guy like Keuchel, but are there any guys that really, really, you know, teams stand out in maybe pursuing him?
You know, I mean, when you look at what the national media has all said, you know, they immediately said the Cardinals are the perfect landing spot because he's a ground ball pitcher in that defense. You know, the Yankees have lost a couple of pitchers. They could be interested. You know, a team that might be interested now is the Brewers because they've lost two of their starters, Brandon Woodruff and Peralta, both on the disabled list. So Milwaukee could be interested. You definitely don't want him to end up going to Milwaukee and then all of a sudden he find it and be the savior up there either. So you got to look at it that way too. So, yeah, there are some teams, like you said, the Mets would be interested. The Yankees would be interested. Houston may be interested. I've heard some rumors that, you know, maybe going back to his old stopping ground down there. So we'll just have to see. He is from Arkansas, though. I think he grew up a Cardinal fan, so that could be a deciding factor as well. You never know.
Tug at the heartstrings. Your last team is the one that you grew up watching, and then if you're successful in that endeavor as well, it makes it that much sweeter for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, if he is a Cardinal fan, to have a chance to play with Yadi and Albert and Waino and all of those things, you just never know. So we'll see what happens, but I'm sure there'll be a decision here in the next few days one way or another with him.
Oh, yeah, it almost has to be. And it's a shame because you bring up a bearded lefty and a guy that played in, you know, for the White Sox, too. It's a shame that we never got a chance to see a guy like Mark Burley in a Cardinal uniform, especially with his connections to the city of St. Louis. And it almost felt like he did at one point want to play here, and it just never seemed to work out. It is a bit of a shame we never saw Burley in a Cardinal uniform.
Yeah, I think he got close a couple of times, and he definitely wanted to play here. And I believe that Mark actually still lives or is living again somewhere up in your area in the St. Charles area where he's from. So, you know, Mark, if you're watching or family members of Mark Burley are paying attention, we'd love to have him on and have a quick conversation. But yeah, you know, I think, like I said, I think he got close a couple of times, but it is a shame that we never got to see him in that Cardinal uniform because that would have been really cool.
Yeah, it would. And speaking of guys that were in the Cardinal uniform that aren't playing anymore because of retirement and age and things like that, there is a pretty big event going on Saturday over at Carshield Field, home of the O'Fallon Hoots. There's a celebrity softball game and a celebrity home run derby that's going on over there on Saturday night. And our own Scott Tobin's going to be over there catching the festivities and taking in all the action. We're going to try and get some interactions with the people that are participating in that and maybe setting up some things through there. And I'm sure we're going to get plenty of pictures and things of that nature for Scott being over there on Saturday night.
Yeah. We'll see what we can do. We know a couple of people that are participating. So, you know, maybe we can set some things up. Our old buddy, Rick Ankiel, who's been nice enough to join us a couple of times, will be over there. Some guys from ESPN that we know well will be over there. So, you know, maybe we can set some things up. Maybe we can become friends with some guys that we don't know yet, like Ray Lankford, who's going to be there, Rafael Furcal, Daniel Descalzo, some of those guys. So maybe we can make some new friends, have them join us in the tavern.
Yes, that would be wonderful. And if you guys are going to that event, make sure you try and find Scott there, say hello. We'd love to put faces to names and things of that nature. So if you're out there on Saturday night over at Carshield Field, make sure you do that. Unfortunately, I can't be there because I'll be over in Illinois calling a women's professional soccer game. So I'm a little disappointed I'm missing out on such a cool event, but very excited to be doing that, be with Fire and Ice again this year. So make sure you catch that game and head over to Carshield Field and catch Scott as well. So let's get back to talk about the Cardinals, though. We talked a little bit about injuries. There's some other injury updates that we kind of want to get some clarification on here. We talked a little bit about Jack Flaherty, about him being out possibly probably another month or so. It seems like he's going to be throwing a bullpen session today. And if all goes well, it's one of two options. He may throw one more bullpen before going on a rehab assignment, or they may just go ahead and give him a rehab assignment after this. It feels like we might be getting a little bit closer to an established timeline on Jack Flaherty coming back. And I hate to use the terrible cliche that everybody uses at this point, but it's one of those, you know, making a trade without making a trade kind of things with him. And I know that gets into your gut as much as it does mine, because I know we're going to be hearing that so many freaking times when this does happen. But to be able to get a guy like Jack Flaherty back probably around the All-Star break, maybe a little bit after, it would be a good thing for the Cardinals to have. And I think the way things are set up right now, it might be good for Jack Flaherty too, because he doesn't have to come back and be the ace. He can continue to work himself back into shape and into form for a playoff run, because you've got guys like Wainwright pitching well and Michaelis pitching well. And if you can get Hudson to repeat the performance he did yesterday, it just gives you three guys at least that can allow a guy like Flaherty to kind of slowly work himself back up and not force himself to go seven innings right off the bat.
Yeah, the Cardinals, one thing we know about the Cardinals, they're going to be really, really cautious with Jack. You know, that's I would be shocked if they send him out on a rehab after tonight or today, whenever he threw that bullpen. I would imagine that they'll be cautious and probably have him throw another one and then go out on his rehab. I think they're going to slow play it. So I think, you know, Ollie Marmol said, oh, maybe the 1st of July, maybe the middle of July, maybe the end of July. You know, I'm going to look middle to end. First part of August is kind of what I'm looking at. A little bit longer than the month that they told us he was going to be out at the beginning of the season. But if you get Jack Flaherty back, hopefully you get the real Jack Flaherty. You know, we don't want him to come back at 50% or 60%. You want him to be completely healthy and be the guy that you need him to be to really help you make a push down the stretch. And then there's some other guys coming back. Hopefully Steven Matz, I think you said, was on his way back as well.
Yeah, he is going to be throwing a bullpen session today as well up in Chicago. So we're going to have possibly some more clarification on him as well coming up. So we'll see if that, you know, goes well for him. You've also got Tyler O'Neill. We talked about him before the show, that looks like he is going to be delayed on his rehab assignment and may very likely be coming back maybe late in that Tampa series next week, maybe not, maybe a little bit later in the week as well. So he's progressing. It seemed like he had a bit of a setback after going on the IL and then kind of going through a couple things. No structural damage was found. He did take a cortisone shot, but it feels like maybe this is another one of those instances where they're being hopeful when it may actually be a little bit longer for Tyler O'Neill.
Yeah. At least they're not rushing it. You know, like you said, he had the cortisone shot, felt better. And then I think I heard he had a little tightness when he was trying to throw the other day. So they're slowing it down, but hopefully, like you said, he'll be able to go out on that rehab next week and we'll see him later. And I believe Dylan Carlson also, I saw right before we came on the show, is going to be in Springfield, I believe, playing for the Cardinals tomorrow night. So that's good news, because, you know, when we first heard that Dylan maybe tore his hamstring, it was like, ooh, that could be a long recovery period. But if he's going out on rehab already, that's positive, because he was starting to turn things around at the plate right before he got hurt.
He certainly was. And, you know, they've said he's progressed to running arcs and sprints, which is another good sign, because it shows that they're not kind of holding him back and the hamstring's not holding him back as well. And is it potential that you may see him in Chicago this weekend for that series? It may be, you know, maybe second game doubleheader, maybe even on Sunday that you may see him after they see what he gets, you know, goes through tomorrow night and his kind of his recovery as well. Cause it's not so much how you play in a game in a sense and how you feel. It's more so how you feel the next day, how you've recovered. So maybe second game of the doubleheader, maybe Sunday you might see him back, at least with the team, maybe not playing, but at the very least with the team, and that would be a good thing as well. And then one of the guys that we talked about earlier and the fact that he's been playing very, very well, Nolan Gorman. He's been out of the lineup the last couple of days with lower back stiffness, and taking a look at the lineup for tonight, he's not in the lineup for tonight either. Lineup for the Cardinals against the Cubs is Edmund, Goldschmidt, Arenado, Yepes, Donovan, Pujols, Molina, Newt Barton, and Bader. So the fact that Nolan Gorman is out again, is it more them being cautious, or is there a little bit of worry that maybe something a little bit worse? Because he was playing very, very well, hit a home run on Memorial Day, was 3-for-3, and then he missed the next couple of games and is out again tonight.
Yeah, I think it's more cautious, being cautious than anything else. You know, I know last night after the game, that Marmol said he was feeling a little bit better. You know, they were hoping they would get something out of him today and then see who was at. So hopefully, you know, who knows, maybe he'll feel good enough that maybe we see him in a pinch hit role or something later on in the game tonight, but hopefully tomorrow. But I think it's more just a precaution thing, because he had a little bit of this in spring training, if you remember.
Yep.
He missed a few days in spring training with a little lower back tightness. So I'm sure they're just being really careful, because like you said, he's been impressive. And, man, being at the ballpark, watching him crush both of those home runs, those were balls that just got over the wall. I mean, we saw, especially that first one, 449 feet. I mean, that thing was – there was no doubt when that thing left the bat. You could hear it. I was in the left field bleachers, and you literally heard the crack of the bat. It was like, holy cow. I mean, there was no doubt. It was like thunder when he hit that thing. And the one on Sunday was not cheap either. So he's definitely showed off his power. And I think the most impressive thing is, you know, he kind of went through a slump where he was 0 for 11, 0 for 12, and struck out 7 times. And it was like, oh, man, pitchers have caught up with him. And then he went like 7 for 10 over the weekend, you know, and was hitting the ball all over the place. Drew a couple of big walks as well. Yep. So I think he's definitely showing progression, and it's exciting.
Well, I was watching the game on Memorial Day, and that was the exact thing I saw. There was one of his at-bats where he ended up working a big walk. And I turned to my brother and I go, that right there is a big sign of maturity and shows you that he does see the ball at the major league level the right way. And granted, maybe it wasn't against the best of pitchers for the Padres, but still, the fact that at the major league level, he was able to work a walk, like you said, after going through a bit of a guy that does seem to strike out a lot, but he's still young, still getting used to it. To be able to work those walks shows you an eye and a maturity that I don't think we were questioning if he had, but seeing a guy in his first experience at the major league level, sometimes they look lost. And a guy like Nolan Gorman does not look lost. And that is a very, very big positive. And the other positive we can take out of this, too, is something that we talked about a couple weeks ago was we weren't sure what we were going to get with Tommy Edman at shortstop. Well, I got to say, and I wasn't down on him being shortstop because I saw what David Eckstein did for this team back in the 2000s. I think Tommy Edman has, again, quieted a lot of the naysayers out there by what he's done at the shortstop position. Hasn't been spectacular, hasn't been earth-shattering, but he's done what he's had to do at that spot and shown that he can play there. And I think it's just another case of Tommy Edman is actually showing us that he is a pretty damn good ball player.
Yeah, you're right. I wasn't sure what to expect either at shortstop, but he's looked really good. It's looked natural. And that's exciting because if he can play shortstop, that does open up that second base position for Gorman to kind of take it. And going back to Gorman really quick, we're talking about adjustments. I think the biggest thing you talked about him taking that walk. The other thing is the fact that he was able to change his approach and his batting stance because he came up, he had the big leg kick. Then he went through that slump, went through the 0 for 11, struck out 7 times, and all of a sudden went, okay, wait a minute. Maybe I can't do this at the big league level. And the next thing you know, he gets rid of the leg kick and just takes a very small stride. And we've seen that he doesn't have to stride because he's hit the 2 home runs to do that. But for a young 22-year-old kid to be able to make that kind of adjustment and change to your batting stance at the major league level after a week just tells you how mature this kid really is.
Well, and how much of that may have been the fact that Albert Pujols is in the clubhouse right now. Help him. I mean, we've seen him do it numerous times with players, young and, you know, I mean, veteran players he'll have conversations with. So it wouldn't shock me in two reasons, that Albert was able to help him through that and that Nolan actually accepted it and maybe even sought it out as well. So the fact that any of those scenarios could have played out just goes to show you once again how much Albert Pujols means to this team. And he's done a lot of stuff at the plate. Hell, we've seen him play in the field too, halfway decent. But yeah. It was a sexy move. It really was. I mean, everybody wanted to see it happen, but it wasn't a big move for the Cardinals in the offseason, but I think it's the one that is going to end up paying the most dividends for this team down the road. And I'm not saying that because Albert went out and pitched, but that was pretty damn awesome as well. But just look at what it's done to this team as far as you can almost tell that this team, the shoulders are higher this year. And I'm not going to sit there and say that this team was down on themselves the last few years, but there's a different energy about this team. And yes, it's Albert in his last year, Yadi in his last year, Wainwright in his last year, all potentially last year's. But there's just a different feel to this team, and I think it's testament to what Albert's brought to this team. Yes, they are still a couple of pieces away probably from being an absolute dominant team, but they're going to go a lot further than people think because of what Albert has brought to this team in different facets of the game on and off the field.
Yeah, I mean, you can't, you know, we talked about this during the offseason quite a few times that you can't just look at what Albert was going to bring on the field. It was what he was going to do in the clubhouse. Hoping guys, you know, we've heard Dan McLaughlin mention numerous times that Juan Yepes has just been like a sponge right at the side of Albert Pujols pretty much every second and listening and learning. And I'm sure that everybody's doing that. And don't think that just the kids aren't doing it. You know, we heard Nolan Arenado profess his love for Albert Pujols last offseason and say he was his favorite player. Don't think that Nolan's not talking to Albert. Don't think that Paul Goldschmidt's not talking to Albert. And, you know, you talked about the different feel on this team. Part of that, I think, too, is that Goldie and Arenado have kind of stepped up in their roles in this team. I think they both feel more comfortable now. I think Goldie's really moved into a leadership role. You know, he's been here for, it's hard to believe, 4 years. This is his fourth year with the Cardinals. Unbelievable. Nolan's in his second year. I think they both feel more comfortable. I think they feel more like they can, you know, kind of voice their ideas and be kind of a voice and leaders in on this team now. So I think it's just a comfort thing. And then, you know, you've got the energy of all these young kids coming up. You know, I think it's just a really good mix. And like I said, they're just a lot of fun to watch right now.
And I'll say this. We heard when Paul Goldschmidt came over from Arizona that he was a very reserved player. He didn't really show a lot of emotion. He was just a guy that checked in, checked out, not in the wrong way. He was there. He did his job, and he took pride in that. But I've seen more emotion in him this year than I've ever seen with Paul Goldschmidt, and I'm loving it because it definitely, once again, shows you the comfort level that he has here, what he has built relationship-wise throughout the area. He took a curtain call. I don't think Paul Goldschmidt would have ever taken a curtain call in Arizona if that were the case. He's taken a curtain call here. I never thought I was going to see that. And the emotion that he's shown this year has been awesome. And once again, you can give that. It's a testament to what Nolan Arenado's brought here, the young guys, what Albert's brought here, what the city of St. Louis has brought out in a Paul Goldschmidt. The comfort level for him has been immense, and that's why he's on his 20-plus game hitting streak right now.
Yeah, I mean, you can tell the Goldie's just having a lot of fun. And I think we're finally seeing, you know, the last couple of years, everybody said he's not quite the same Paul Goldschmidt. He's not hitting the ball the opposite field as much. I think he finally feels comfortable, and we're finally seeing the hitter that he was all those years in Arizona he's been really good here. Don't get me wrong. 30 home runs. You know, he's hit almost 100 RBIs both full years and close to 300. But I mean, this is the guy that was hitting 330, 340 in Arizona and hitting everything hard to all fields. And I think it's just the fact that he really has finally found his place and is truly completely comfortable here now.
I think you're 100% right. And one final note here in the world of baseball, we'd be remiss if we didn't mention that today is Lou Gehrig Day. So a big celebration day as far as that and helping out ALS chapters as well. We want to mention that if you want to support the St. Louis Regional ALS chapter, tickets for June 13th, proceeds from that, there's going to be a special ticket offer for that. Make sure you get those tickets to help support the St. Louis region of the ALS Foundation. And it's Lou Gehrig Day. They're celebrating that all across Major League Baseball today, including up in Chicago. So a big thing that a lot of us don't think about. I mean, we talk about, you know, the different ailments and stuff that go on. We have, you know, Mother's Day, it's fighting breast cancer, Father's Day, testicular cancer, all of those things. But having a day for Lou Gehrig to celebrate his life and his career and also to once again shine light on ALS as well is something we definitely want to be talking about. So make sure to get your tickets for the game on June 13th as well. That'll be against the Pirates.
Absolutely. Like you said, ALS doesn't get talked about nearly as much as it should because in my mind, I don't think there's any – I mean, cancer is horrible. All diseases are horrible. But what people that get ALS have to go through is just, in my mind, it's about the worst thing that could happen to you.
Yeah, 100%. It's not, you never want to have a disease anyway, but to have a one like ALS is one that is scary to even think about. So for all those that are fighting the fight against ALS, we support you. And make sure you get your tickets for June 13th to help the St. Louis region of ALS as well. All right, let's jump into some hockey talk real quick. We didn't get a chance to reflect on the end of the Blues season. They did fall to Colorado in six games. I forgot they won that comeback game in Colorado. They ended up winning more games in Colorado than they did at home this season in this series. So it's a little obviously Jordan Binnington being injured by Nazem Kadri really hurt this team. I think it would have been a different series if Binnington would have played. throughout. I think the Blues would be playing Edmonton right now, and I think they actually would have had a really good chance of beating Edmonton if Jordan Binnington were in net. But unfortunately, that's not what happened. You have to look back at this season. I still think you have to consider it a bit of a success. Yeah, the goaltending struggled off and on throughout the year. Ville Husso really stepped up. Binnington, you know, took a back seat for most of the year, but then came back hard in the playoffs and was almost vintage 2019 for him. You saw a lot of players kind of rise up. We saw Vladimir Tarasenko have a great, almost career season after requesting a trade in the offseason. David Perron obviously doing what he did. You got to see the emergence of Jordan Kyrou. Defensively, still a little bit of an up-in-the-air situation. We got to see Scott Perunovic at the end of the year. He kind of shined a little bit of a light on himself in the playoffs. Alexei Toropchenko was another big name that kind of came down in the last couple of weeks and into the playoffs. So this team has a bright future, I think. And, you know, one of the questions I put out there on our page for previewing today's show was, you know, looking at the window for this team, you know, is this playoff championship window still open? Is it closing or is it closed? Because we do still have a lot of question marks with this team. We're going to have some guys leaving, maybe not some big names. I mean, Tyler Bozak is a free agent. Husso is a free agent. So none of the big guys are leaving this year. But is this a case where we're looking at a window that's closing, or is it still wide open with, you know, a couple of moves?
I think it's still open. I'm not sure it's wide open, but it's open. You know, we'll see if they can get something worked out with David Perron. That would be a big loss if somehow Perron doesn't come back. So I think that's the biggest move they have to figure out a way to get done. You know, figure out a salary that works for both sides to make that happen. I don't think the window is closed. I'd say it's probably three quarters of the way open right now. You know, and then, you know, we'll see as we move through the next couple of years and see if they can at some point make the big move that everybody in St. Louis is hoping happens. You know, with the kid that's playing in Canada, we won't even say his name right now, but, you know, we'll see. We'll see if the kid from St. Louis gets to come home in the next couple of years. But, yeah, I think if you can bring Perron back, if you can figure out, you know, I think him and what you do with Husso are probably the two biggest decisions they have to make this offseason, quite honestly.
Yeah, and I look at it and I go, I don't think Husso's coming back next year. And it's not so much that I don't think the Blues want him. I just think that he's going to end up costing too much because, right, you know, with what you're paying Jordan Binnington right now, you obviously aren't going to pay northwards of $10 million between your two goaltenders. I mean, Binnington's making six. So, you know, I think Husso will probably get something in the four and a half range. Now, granted, he didn't wow people with his playoff performance. Yes, game one against Minnesota, gets the shutout, but outside of that, gave up at least four goals in every game after that. So he's not a guy that really wowed a lot of people, but he did show a lot of potential. And in a team like Toronto, which I don't know if they're going to move on from Jack Campbell, he's a free agent this year. He did a lot of things well for the Maple Leafs this year. Arizona's a team that could possibly make a little bit of a run. Obviously, his connection to Davidson over there, or to Armstrong over there, is a part of that. You know, he could want to pull a guy like Ville Husso into his team. You know, if the market doesn't pan out for him, though, being back in St. Louis may not be a bad thing. I mean, these two guys in Husso and Binnington kind of played off each other pretty well. I don't think Husso pushes Binnington as much as a guy like Jake Allen did. I don't think that Husso has that in him. Not in a negative way. I just think that Jake Allen is a bit of a bulldog. He needs to be pushed a little bit. Jordan Binnington is a bulldog that needs to be pushed a little bit. Ville Husso is a very solid goaltender, but I feel like he is a bit quiet and reserved and doesn't want to rock the boat in a sense. So I think for a guy like Binnington to succeed, you need a little bit more of another bulldog mentality. And I'm not sure if the Blues have that. I mean, I don't know if Charlie Lindgren is a guy that has that. I don't know if a guy like Joel Hofer is a guy that has that, or even a Colton Ellis has that bulldog mentality. I think one of them might, but are they ready to kind of take that mantle for next year and push Jordan Binnington for that number one spot? Because Binnington is successful when he has a little bit of push behind him, a little bit of a, oh crap, I got a guy that's gunning for my spot. I need to play hard. I don't think Husso was gunning for Binnington's spot. I think he took advantage of the situation and played very, very well. And this team wouldn't have been in the playoffs without Ville Husso, but they need somebody that's going to push Binnington to be his best. And I think they may have that in the minors, but is that guy ready to go? So the Ville Husso situation is definitely very, very interesting. And I don't think David Perron's going anywhere. It seems like everything that you've heard is that both sides are of the mindset that he's not going anywhere. It's just about, like you said, finding the right number. I think Tyler Bozak, unfortunately, probably is moving on. He is an unrestricted free agent. I don't think they're going to be able to re-sign him. You've got Nick Leddy that you acquired at the deadline. He's an unrestricted free agent, so he might be moving on. But this is where things get really, really interesting, though. You talk about the man who we're not going to name because we don't want to jinx anything. I think this is the prime opportunity for this Blue team to make the splash and try to find a way to pry him out of Calgary. And if that means dangling guys, I think you have to really think hard about dangling guys. I mentioned Scott Perunovich and what he kind of showed in the playoffs about what he can do for this team after having not played for a couple of months due to injury. I think, and this is going to sound crazy because he has a no trade clause, but I think this gives you prime opportunity to dangle a guy like Torey Krug out there and potentially try to entice Calgary into saying, look, we can give you a top-pairing defenseman. We can give you a number one draft pick. Not a number one, but a first-round draft pick. We can give you one of our higher-end minor league players. You know, a guy like Alexandrov might be up there. I don't think you touch Jake Neighbors. You get Jake Neighbors has to be off limits. And if that makes or breaks a deal, then in my mind, it makes or breaks a deal. It breaks it. I don't want to give up on Jake Neighbors. I want Jake Neighbors in a Blues uniform here in the next couple of years. But if you can get away with throwing a guy like Nikita Alexandrov in that mix with Krug, with a first-round pick, and this is where the shocker is going to come in, okay? This is the shock and the – if I'm Calgary, I need to take this kind of deal. You put Jordan Kyrou at the top of that that trade, and you say – we're going to give you Jordan Kyrou, Torey Krug, a first-round pick, and one of our minor leaguers that's not Jake Neighbors, and you give us MT. That's the deal that the Blues need to offer out there. And I think that it might get it done. I've run the scenarios on Cap Friendly, and financially, that deal can get done, and that deal makes sense. It gives Calgary a top-line forward. They're losing Johnny Gaudreau as well, so it gives you a guy to replace Gaudreau. It gives you a top defensive partner in Torey Krug. It gives you a first round pick, albeit it's a later pick, and it gives you another minor league player. I think that's what the Blues need to do. It's a shock move, yes, but I think it's a move that could work.
Yeah, I was going to ask you. I mean, that's the rumor that I keep hearing, that is that Jordan Kyrou is going to have to be in that trade more than likely, you know, which makes sense because you're not going to be able to afford in a year or two to pay all three of those kids and Thomas Kyrou. And I almost said his name. So, you know, that probably makes the most sense, you know, and you know, they're going to want something in return big for him. My question, you talk about trading Torey Krug. So then if you trade part of your top defensive line with the struggles that the Blues already had defensively last year, and we talked about Nick Leddy being gone too, then don't you have an even bigger hole on the defense that you have to try to figure out how you're going to fill?
Well, Torey Krug wasn't a top-pairing defender here in St. Louis.
That's true.
You've got Parayko, and I think if you make that move, I think that allows you to potentially re-sign a guy like Nick Leddy, and if that's the case, I would do it. I would bring back – if you can make it work, bring back Nick Leddy, pair him with Parayko at the top. Then you've got then you've got Justin Falk. You can maybe move up. I mean, I know this is going to sound crazy. Once again, Callie Rosen showed a lot in the playoffs, and they just re-signed him to a two-year, two-way contract. I'm not saying that Callie Rosen is a second-pairing defender, but it does give you more options. I think if you put a Justin Falk and a Scott Perunovich together, obviously Falk and Krug played together, and if Perunovich is a younger version of Torey Krug, it makes sense. And then you've got, you know, a kind of a combination between Callie Rosen, Robert Bortuzzo, Nico Mikkola. That could work, and you still got Marco Scandella in there as well. And I think even if you don't re-sign Nick Leddy, I think playing Scandella and Parayko together is probably the right play. I think they can get back to where they were at when they were successful right after, you know, the Bomeister incident and they brought in Scandella. So I'm not going to sit there and say it's a linchpin that you have to re-sign Nick Leddy, but moving Torey Krug, I don't think necessarily destroys what this team does defensively. It does weaken them just a little bit, but once again, we talk about the thing that really has plagued the Blues defensively is it's not the fact that they don't have guys that can play defense. It's the fact that they have lost a lot of length in the defensive zone. So moving a guy like Torey Krug, who is just right around 6 foot, it doesn't hurt you in a sense because Scott Perunovic coming in is roughly the same size. What you really need is you really need length in the defensive category. So having a Parayko and a Scandella together, having a Callie Rosen and a Robert Bortuzzo or a Nico Mikola up there kind of cuts down the ice in the defensive zone. And that's something that the Blues really, really need to get back to. It was where they were successful in 2019. And, you know, moving on from Torrey Krug frees up the money, obviously. It's a good contract. It's not a bad contract. It's one that you can move, but he does have that no trade clause. So it is tricky. It is very, very tricky. But I think moving him doesn't hurt them as much as you think. There's other factors, I think, that you have to kind of play around with when it comes to pairings. It's more matchup driven than I think it is about who you have.
Okay. I just wanted to get your thoughts on that.
Yeah, it's a very interesting offseason. Don't get me wrong. It's going to be very, very interesting to see how things play out in the NHL. And I think you're right. I think 3/4 of the way open is the window right now. If you get the guy we aren't going to talk about, I think it flies it wide open for a longer period of time. But you do have a lot of question marks coming up again after next season. You know, Tarasenko's up. O'Reilly's up. You've got a couple other players that are up. What do you do at that point? There's a lot of things that you're going to have to look at. I think next year is a big, big year for the St. Louis Blues. It's going to determine their next 5 years, how they play out next year for sure.
Think there's any chance that they talk to Ryan O'Reilly to try to get something done this year before you get to that free agent year?
I think conversations are had, yes, but I think Doug Armstrong is going to be very, very careful with this one. Not because I don't think O'Reilly deserves another contract and doesn't deserve to be here. I think it is interesting to see where they're going to put him after this year because he has lost a bit of a step. He is more of a defensive-minded guy, but you need my boss at work today and I were talking about this exact thing. You need a guy like Ryan O'Reilly to win defensive draws because this team doesn't have another guy that can win defensive draws as much as he does. So it's once again, it goes back to matchups. Craig Berube talks about he doesn't have a top line. He doesn't have a second line. He has 4 lines. It's a matter of what you feel like the matchup lines are going to be and how much you're willing to pay a guy to play on what may be in some people's minds a 4th line, but it's really a shutdown line going up against a top line of another team that O'Reilly's probably going to have to play on. You're going to have probably an O'Reilly, a Barbashev, and a Walker line that really just shuts a team's number one line down and shifts other lines against each other. But are they going to be paying O'Reilly what they paid Alex Steen to play on that line? How many minutes does he get? There's a lot of things that go into it. So I think there's definitely conversations, but I'll say this. I don't anticipate a Ryan O'Reilly extension this offseason.
Yeah, you talk about O'Reilly losing the stuff, and it definitely seemed like it during the regular season. And then you see what he did in the playoffs, and it's like, oh, there's that 2019 Ryan O'Reilly that showed up again. So, you know, do you pay him for what he brings in the playoffs? I mean, because where would the Blues have been in the postseason if it's not for David Perron and Ryan O'Reilly?
100% agree. It, like I said, it's a tricky situation these next couple of years, and the next 5 years hinge on what they do with this offseason and what they do next year. So plenty of those things to talk about as we get closer and closer. Obviously, the conference finals are going on right now, Colorado-Edmonton. That game two is tonight. That was a wild first game. Both starting goaltenders leave that game. It's going to be real interesting to see how that plays out. I think Colorado losing Darcy Kemper is worse than Edmonton losing Mike Smith. And the way that Edmonton played, if Kemper doesn't come back, Edmonton might win that series. But that's just my thoughts.
That would be a shocker. Can either one of them beat Tampa? Because I'm just I'm a Ranger fan, but I don't see the Rangers getting out of the East.
Did you not see game one last night?
I know, but I still don't see them getting out of game one. I still don't see them getting out of the East.
I think maybe you're sitting back there going, I don't want to put too much hope into them and be disappointed. And if the Rangers end up winning that series, you're going to be losing your mind. I think that was a shock to me last night. I'll be perfectly honest. So game two of that series is tomorrow night. That'll be a big, big game for both those teams. Definitely something to watch as well. All right. A couple of other things to hit on here before we get out of here. The NBA finals begin tonight, Boston and Golden State. We're not going to dive too deep into it, but I just kind of want to get your feelings on it. Obviously, Jason Tatum being the local kid, Can he bring a championship, not a parade to St. Louis, but can he bring a championship celebration to St. Louis this year? Or is Golden State just too damn good again?
Yeah, Golden State's on a mission. I don't think Boston can beat them. Jason's got to play a lot better than he did in the Eastern Conference Finals. I mean, he had a couple of really good games, but then he had a couple of really bad games. Had a lot of unforced turnovers. Just made some ill-advised mistakes that cost Boston. And if you do that against Golden State, this team's going to blow you out. I don't think this series goes very long. I honestly think Golden State wins in five. I just don't think Boston has the firepower to stay with them.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, I think the way Golden State's playing right now, they are in that, hey, this might be our last chance, and we're going to give it everything we got. And they got guys that are healthy, and that's the biggest thing. Now that they're healthy, we're seeing what they were and really how good they really are. Yeah, I think you're right. I think this is going five or six, maybe six at the latest. And I think Golden State will win it. Not going to sit there and say these guys are going to retire after winning it, but this might be the last time we see this conglomeration of Warriors together. And honestly, I know a lot of people hated it, you know, them continuously going to back-to-back finals and winning and all that stuff. But it is going to be a bit sad to see that kind of go away. And you got to look back and say that this was a really, really good franchise, a really good team, and they did a lot of really good things. Yes, the whole Kevin Durant thing, you know, that was more Kevin Durant more than anything else, but he got his championship and moved on. But I like what Steph Curry brings to that team, and I'll be happy and okay if Golden State wins.
Yeah, you know, under normal circumstances, I'd be rooting for Boston big time.
Oh, yeah.
Like you said, the local kid, Jason Tatum. But how can you not feel good for Klay Thompson? After the last 2 years, everything he's gone through, you know, tearing the ACL and then having his Achilles blow out on him and on his rehab, missing 2 years, and come back and see the guy just shoot. And, you know, like you said, a lot of people don't like him, whatever. You can say whatever you want about Golden State. But you may never see two guys that are as pure as shooters play together again as Klay and Steph are. I mean, you have to – if you're a basketball fan and you love the game of basketball, just watching those two guys shoot, they're unreal, honestly. I mean, that's the best word for it. Maybe the two best shooters we've ever seen.
Yeah. Yeah, I cannot disagree with you on that in the least. And that's coming from a guy that's not big into the NBA, kind of follows it from the outskirts. Yeah, I 100% agree. I mean, I remember watching Steph back when he was playing in Davidson. So
oh, yeah.
I mean, if that right there doesn't tell you how good of a shooter he was, he came out of Davidson and eventually – made it to where he's at now. So should be a fun series that begins tonight on ABC. And then over in the NFL, I had a couple of big names in a sense retire. Frank Gore officially retired. I don't think he played last year, but he's now officially retired, going to be going into the San Francisco Hall of Fame, that Ring of Honor over there. Definitely deserved. Hated him when he played against us here when the Rams were in St. Louis. That was a guy that was a great fantasy pickup, but you hated playing against him. So he is officially retired. Congratulations to him. And one that's a little bit more immediate for us, not just because of his Rams connection, but really what he did in Buffalo for a long time. And not even when he played, the fact that he went back to the playoff games and crushed beers shirtless. Ryan Fitzpatrick is retiring after 17 years. Obviously he had the nasty injury when he was playing for Washington. But a guy that's seemed to not be one that was going to be a starting quarterback, but somehow found a way to make it work. And just, I wouldn't say rescued franchises, but it seemed like franchises were better with Ryan Fitzpatrick at the helm, even if it wasn't for a full season. Just an outstanding quarterback, an outstanding guy, and a smart guy too. He's gone after 17 seasons. What are your thoughts on Ryan Fitzpatrick?
I still remember the very first game that he came into when Mark Bulger got hurt. And they're like, yeah, here comes Ryan Fitzpatrick, this kid from Harvard. It's like, oh, crap. This is good. And then he was actually good. You know, he came in and played well in his time with the Rams. And, you know, never would have thought that he'd be in the league for 17 years. But for a guy that, you know, wasn't real heralded coming out of school and to bounce around, he made a great career for himself and has been fun to watch on social media and on the sidelines and everything else. So the league's going to miss the beard for sure.
Yeah, it is. But I have no doubt that he's going to show up in stands throughout the country just doing what he's doing, because it just seems like he's that kind of guy. I'm not a frat guy, but he's a guy that enjoys football, enjoys the fans, enjoys the experience. I could definitely see him at least maybe more so Buffalo than anywhere else, but I expect to see more of him in the stands. Do you see him being a guy that gets into coaching or broadcasting, or is he going to be a professional fan now?
It seems like he would be really entertaining as a broadcaster. You know, we'll see. I that wouldn't surprise me. Like you said, though, as smart as he is, I could see him getting into coaching, being an offensive coordinator or something, if that's something that he wants to do. You know, Harvard grad, he could probably do just about anything he wants, honestly.
Yeah, he really could. And just one of the things that he's done, he set an NFL record by starting games for 9 teams in his career. Obviously, he played for Buffalo, the Rams, Bengals, Titans, Texans, Jets, Bucks, Dolphins, and then Washington in his career. So, like I said, a guy that touched a lot of franchises and made a lot of franchises successful when he was there. Never made the playoffs during his career, though. That is something that you go, man, if there was a guy that deserved to at least make the playoffs in one of those years, it was Ryan Fitzpatrick. Never made the playoffs in his career.
Yeah, like you said, though, he was a guy who a lot of those teams was the backup, and then the starter got hurt or struggled, and then he came in, and the team was like 0-3 or 1-5, and all of a sudden Fitzpatrick came in. The next thing you knew, they were like 7-7 and fighting for a playoff spot. It seemed like it happened every year.
Yeah, it really, really did. It really did. So congratulations, Frank Gore, for retiring. And Ryan Fitzpatrick, hell of a career, man. Congratulations. We hope to see more of you here in the professional fan side of things here very, very soon. All right, Scott, we're getting close to first pitch between the Cardinals and Cubs. You got anything else before we head out tonight and hopefully catch a winner in Wrigley?
Yeah, let's all tune in and watch Matthew Liberatore. Hopefully the Cardinals can start this 5-game series off on the right foot. And everybody have a good weekend. If you're not doing anything on Saturday night, come out and see me at the Home Run Derby in O'Fallon.
Yeah. Make sure you get out there and support the local teams and the local celebrities that are going to be out there as well. So, all right. Well, thank you guys for joining us. I know it was an early start. We wanted to get this in before the Cardinals series began with the Cubs. We'll be back with you guys some point next week. I think we're going to have some free time opening up. So you'll be seeing our pretty mugs here very, very, very soon in the near future. We'll recap what's going on in the world of baseball and anything else that may drop in that time frame. For Scott Tobin, I am Wags. Thank you guys for joining us. Have a great weekend, a safe weekend. We'll see you guys next week.
Hey, it's you, man, here from Casey. For all your sports news, catch the Toasted Tavern with Scott Tobin and the man called Wags weeknights at 9 p.m. You can follow Toasted Tavern on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. Let's get toasted.